So this is a very, very famous and popular verse, and an important verse of the Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna is giving us the principle of devotion and how it is connected to fearlessness. The whole Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says, can be divided into three parts, each of six chapters. The first six chapters, Prabhupada says, deals with the description of the soul, its characteristics, and so on, and also of how, by adopting different forms of yoga, the soul can actually get relieved from bondage and understand the Supreme Lord. The last six chapters, that is chapters 13 to 18, they deal with material nature, its characteristics. It also talks about how the living entity contacts this material nature and relates to it in bondage, and then how the living entity can get free from this bondage by following the different processes of karma, jnana, bhakti, and so on, are also mentioned. Eventually, the discussion culminates in glorification of devotional service as the supreme path. The middle six chapters essentially deal with devotional service, its activities, its characteristics, and so on. And in the course of describing bhakti, Krishna also describes his own opulences, his vibhutis, his energies, and also he talks about how he is superior in all respects to the individual living entity. Srila Prabhupada says that the first six chapters and the last six chapters are like coverings, and the middle six chapters are the essence. One should not think that because the last six chapters are the conclusion or the end, because they're the last six, therefore they're the most important. Not like that. It's actually the middle six chapters which are the most important, and they contain the essence of what Krishna wants to say in the Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are meant to cover and protect the middle six chapters. The middle six chapters are so important that Srila Prabhupada says in one purport that simply by understanding these six chapters, one's life can become glorious and one can eventually go home back to Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentaries, has also made a similar kind of division of six chapters each for these 18 chapters. And he says that the first six chapters deal with karma or karma yoga. The last six chapters deal with jnana yoga or jnana. And the middle six chapters deal with bhakti yoga or devotional service. Therefore, it's not hard to understand why Srila Prabhupada has said that the middle six chapters are the essence, or they are the most important, because devotional service is the supreme path for spiritual realization. In fact, the other processes, like the process of karma or jnana or yoga, are not independent. In and of themselves, they cannot yield perfection even in their own path. They need to have a little bit of bhakti at least to give perfection even in their own path. For example, if there is a jnana yogi, he cannot become a perfect jnana yogi, he cannot attain liberation, which is the goal of the jnana yogi, unless he has also been practicing some bhakti along with his jnana yoga practice. So this is called bhakti mishra jnana. Jnana or the process of jnana or the culmination which is moksha or liberation is his goal, but he has to use bhakti to some degree to achieve that goal. Bhakti is not his goal, but he needs bhakti to achieve his goal. Similarly with the Ashtanga Yogi and with the Karma Yogi and so on. So the other processes of yoga are dependent on bhakti yoga, and the practitioners of these different processes must use bhakti yoga even though bhakti may not be their ultimate goal. On the other hand, bhakti, or the process of devotional service, is completely independent. Bhakti yoga is not dependent on the other processes of yoga. A bhakti yogi can achieve perfection simply by practicing bhakti yoga. He or she does not need to accept bits and pieces of karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga and so on for attaining success in bhakti. So the bhakti yogi's goal is very clear. Pure devotional service. Love of God. Pure bhakti. Kevala bhakti. Unalloyed devotional service. So this is the qualification and the characteristic of bhakti. It is independent, completely powerful to give all possible auspicious results to the practitioner. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained that the first few chapters of the Bhagavad Gita give knowledge or jnana of the soul and different processes of yoga. Therefore, this is confidential knowledge. And after that, in the 7th and 8th chapter, there is some indication or some knowledge of the opulences of the Lord and also about the Lord Himself. There is an introduction to the Lord. One gets to have a conception of who Bhagavan is. So this is more confidential knowledge. And finally, it's only when we come to the 9th chapter that we get the most confidential knowledge, which is an understanding of Kevala Bhakti or pure devotional service. Could you please ask him to stop? So there is the understanding of pure devotional service, unalloyed devotion with no ulterior motives, no self-interest. This is the highest perfection of life. Looking at it another way, Srila Prabhupada says that the first 6 chapters represent confidential knowledge, the last 6 chapters, which is jnana, represent more confidential knowledge, and the middle 6 chapters represent the most confidential knowledge. So in Sanskrit there is, it's called taratam nyaya. Nyaya means logic. Taratam means good, better, best. The logic of the good, better, best. So the first 6 chapters are confidential. They're good. They are secret. They're secret knowledge. But the last 6 chapters, they represent more secret knowledge. So there's Guhya Jnana, which is secret knowledge in the first 6 chapters. The last 6 chapters is more confidential knowledge, which is Guhya Tara Jnana. And then there is the middle 6 chapters, which is Guhya Tama Jnana, the most confidential knowledge. This is how the analysis has been done. And why does it represent the most confidential knowledge? Because it's bhakti. And why does bhakti have to be most confidential? Because it's something that is very dear to the Lord. It's a treasure. The Lord has many, many different kinds of treasures in His treasury house. As you know, the Supreme Lord is defined as being one who is full in 6 opulences. So He's complete and perfect in all kinds of opulences. And which is His chief opulence? It's not mentioned in those 6 there, Shadaishwarya. But His greatest wealth, the treasure in His treasury, is bhakti, love. Because it is by bhakti that the Supreme Lord can actually be controlled, He can be actually purchased by His devotee. So therefore the Lord is very cautious before He awards bhakti to someone. He may award material advancement to the karmi. He may award liberation to the jnani. He may award material perfections and siddhis to the yogi. But he is very careful before he awards pure devotional service to anyone, because this is the most precious thing he has. Other things he can give, he has unlimited, he can give that, but this is very cautious. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also further explains that the Bhagavad Gita is like a treasure chest, and this treasure chest is made of gold. The lower lid, or the lower platform, the base of this chest, is made of pure gold, solid gold, and it represents the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. The last six chapters represent the lid, or the covering, of this treasure chest, which is also made of solid gold but encrusted with many valuable rubies and diamonds and everything. The confidential, more confidential. Priceless, more priceless. So that's the treasure chest. But a treasure chest must have something inside, which is treasure. And that's the middle six chapters. So the middle six chapters, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is like that one jewel which you cannot value. It's valueless. Of unlimited value, this one jewel is lying inside this treasure chest, which is carefully guarded. And there are some important verses in the Bhagavad Gita which are the key. Lord Krishna has explained two verses. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evai shati satyamte pratijane priyashime, in which Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, do these four things and you are assured of coming back to me. The first thing is, you always think about me, manmana. Be absorbed in thoughts of me, just like the Brajavasis did. They were always thinking of me in great devotion. They could not forget me even for a moment. So try to become like that. Second, become my devotee, bhavamat bhaktaha, which means practice sadhana bhakti. If you cannot spontaneously remember me like the Brajavasis, manmana, then at least practice your sadhana bhakti, engage all your senses in my service by hearing, by chanting about me, by offering worship and doing so many other forms of service for me. Madhyaji, also worship me, offer me incense and flowers and decorate my deity form, cook wonderful preparations to offer me, and so on. Mam namaskuru, if nothing, at least offer obeisances to me, at least bow down before me. And if you do these things regularly, mam eva shi, you will definitely, mam eva ishyasi, you will certainly come to me. Satyamte, this is the truth, O Arjuna, I tell you this, because you are my devotee. Maan evaishyasi satyamte pratijane priyosine. Pratijane means pratigya, it's my vow, it's my promise, and I'm speaking the truth, Arjuna, I'm not lying here, that you will come to me, bhaktosime, because you are my dear devotee. So the question may be asked, because the word satyam can be understood as being truth or a vow. So, Arjuna asks, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he asks Krishna, well, Krishna, you are saying it's your vow, pratigya, and you are saying satyamte, satyamte, I take this, this truth, I take this vow, that you will come back to me if you become my devotee. But people in Mathura, they have this habit of taking vows very casually. They just make vows just like that. So how can I believe you? Arjuna was referring to Krishna's promise that he would come back the next day when he left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, and he never came back. Of course, he came back one time after killing Dantavakra. So alluding to that, Arjuna is saying, well, you see, people in Mathura are not known to keep their promises. So how can I believe you when you say this? So then Krishna replies and says, my dear Arjun, yes, people may lie sometimes, people from Mathura do make casual promises, but you see, even people in Mathura, they don't deceive those who are dear to them. Priyosime, so you are dear to me, therefore how can I deceive you? Therefore I am speaking the truth, have faith, that if you simply become my devotee, then you will come back to me. And the next verse, Sarvadhanman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja, aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami mahashuchaha. My dear Arjun, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So it is explained that these two verses are like the key with which you can open the treasure chest. Open it up and then take possession of that valuable diamond of pure devotion, bhakti, that is inside. So the Bhagavad Gita contains this precious jewel in these pages somewhere. And especially in the middle six chapters. So when Krishna is about to begin speaking this Manmana Bhava verse in the 18th chapter, he says, now I'm going to tell you the Guhyatama, the most confidential knowledge which has already been spoken by me before. And he is referring to the 9th chapter. And especially to the last verse of the 9th chapter, which is also the Manmana Bhava verse. Slight variation there. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishati yuktva ivam atmanam payana. Says here that because if you do these four things, you will certainly, if you are constantly engaged in my worship like this, you will certainly come to me. And this is the last verse of the 9th chapter, 34th verse. So in this chapter, Krishna has described many things which I will talk about in a few moments. And he concludes with this one verse. This one verse, or the corresponding verse in the 18th chapter, Manmana Bhava, is considered to be the essence of all the scriptures, of all the Vedas, of all knowledge. This one verse is the heart of everything. If one knows this one verse, one knows everything. So this topic of pure devotion is being addressed in this 9th chapter. So, the middle six chapters are the most confidential knowledge, and in particular, in these six chapters, the 9th chapter is the most confidential knowledge. So therefore this chapter itself has been titled the most confidential knowledge. And in the very second verse of this chapter we have Krishna saying, Raj Vidya Raj Guhyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam. That this is Raj Vidya, it's the king of knowledge. Raj Guhyam is the king of all secrets. It is pure. It is transcendental. So this knowledge of pure devotional service is very confidential. And although Krishna gives a conclusion in the last verse of the 9th chapter, he does make references to it time and again throughout this chapter. And the verse we are talking about today is one such reference. He begins the 9th chapter by talking about the importance of hearing. You will remember that in the 8th chapter, in the beginning, Arjuna had asked many questions, and one of the questions was, how can a devotee or how can anyone know you at the time of death? And Krishna had answered the other questions in just two verses, but this one question he took the whole chapter to answer. And then at the end of it he described how the yogis need to adjust and manipulate their situation so that they can depart at just the right time and so on. Then they're assured of perfection. And then Krishna concludes that 8th chapter by saying, but for a devotee it's not like that. A devotee is not dependent on the external situations of, you know, the movement of the sun in the sky and Dakshinayana, Uttarayana, everything like that for attaining perfection. Simply on the strength of his constant remembrance of Krishna, his pure devotion for Krishna, he or she is assured of going back to Godhead. So that's the conclusion of the 8th chapter. Now in the ninth chapter, Krishna is explaining how to become a devotee like that, what it means practically to be a devotee like this. And he begins the ninth chapter by talking about the importance of hearing. Just by hearing this most confidential knowledge, one automatically becomes a devotee. And in order to help us appreciate this more, to develop more faith, he describes his own opulences in this material nature. Because that reinforces, it strengthens our faith. Yeah, actually Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he talks about his relationship with this cosmic manifestation. He talks about how the maintenance, destruction and creation of this world is going on simply by his will and under his superintendence. As the saying goes, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. But even so, the Lord remains completely aloof from the entire creation. He is not personally involved. At the same time, everything goes on perfectly because his energies, his opulences are in action. So this is the achintya bheda bheda, the simultaneous oneness and different principles between Krishna and his material nature. So the idea, this is meant to create a mood of reverence and devotion in our heart towards Krishna by understanding his glories. So then one may think, well, if Krishna is so glorious and he's creating this whole material world in such a wonderful way and maintaining it and yet he remains aloof, then who would not surrender to him? But Krishna says, yes, there are people who don't surrender. Avajananti ma mudha manushin tanumashritam param bhav majananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. Yes, there are foolish people who think I'm an ordinary human being. They don't understand my supreme nature and therefore they deride me when I come here. And therefore all their hopes are dashed. Moghasha, mogha karmano, mogha jnana viketataha, rakshati maturin saiva. So he is talking about those people who will take shelter of demoniac principles, of asuric principles, and follow various other non-devotional paths. And then he talks about those who are very intelligent, who will actually take shelter of Krishna. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti maashritaha bhajanta nirna manaso jyatva bhutadimadeyam. He says, these are the Mahatmas who are taking complete shelter of my divine spiritual energy and they're constantly absorbed in my devotional service. And then he explains, what is it that makes them Mahatmas? What is it they do that makes them Mahatmas? Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dhravrita namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasaka. This is what they do which makes them Mahatmas. Satatam kirtayanto mam, they are always absorbed in glorifying me. Yatantascha dhravrita, they are always endeavoring with firm determination to serve me and to please me. And they are always engaged in my service. This is their nature. So having explained who is a Mahatma, then Krishna comes and says, actually not everybody worships me like this. The Mahatmas are very rare. Srila Prabhupada explains that earlier in the 7th chapter, Krishna has spoken about the Sukritinas, those who are pious people who have become devotees of the Lord. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna artho arthat jigyasu jnani cha bharatarshata. These four kinds of people come to me. One who is in distress, one who needs material benefits, one who is inquisitive, and one who is in knowledge. These four categories of people come to me and render service to me. But these are not pure devotees yet. So they are not quite in the category of the Mahatmas who are unalloyed devotees. But nevertheless, both these are direct worshippers of Krishna. But then in the 15th verse of the 9th chapter, then Krishna says, Jnana yajyena chapyanme yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prithatvena bahudha vishrato mukham. He says that apart from these two kinds of direct worshippers, there are others who also worship me, but that worship is indirect. The first one is ekatvena. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it Ahangropasana, Aham Agrat. So which means that I am thinking I am him or he is me. Whatever you are, I am that. That is a prayer. So these are the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, who actually want to merge into the Lord, who imagine that they themselves are the Supreme. And this has already been covered in the 11th and 12th verses where Krishna is talking about the two kinds of people who don't surrender to him here. And then having talked about these people, he is now mentioning the other category of people, prithaktvena bahudha, who imagine various forms of the Supreme. They are essentially demigod worshippers. They think the demigods are supreme. And in this way they also are deluded. And then finally there is the Vishvato Mukham, the person who worships the universal form of the Lord. So then why are these three called worshippers of the Lord? Why is the worshipper of the impersonal absolute, the worshipper of the demigod, the worshipper of the universal form, which is the universe basically, why are they called worshippers of the Lord? Because they are worshipping something that is not different from Krishna. Krishna's energy is not different from Krishna, be it the Brahman or be it the material world. However, it is the improper way of worshipping Krishna. It is not direct worship of Krishna. So then, after the 15th verse and 16 to 19th verses, Krishna talks about how these people worship the universal form, how Krishna is seen in the universe, how through observing the various phenomena in the universe one can actually worship the Lord in that way, indirectly. And then in the 20 and 21st verses he talks about worship of the demigods, prithaktvena bahudha. He talks about how the demigods are being maintained. And then he comes to the verse for today. He says, but my devotees are not maintained like that. You see, the worshippers of the demigods get various gifts from the demigods. But the demigods are not independent. The demigods can only award results according to our karma, not otherwise. The demigods are not independent to break the laws of karma. So whatever the worshippers of the demigods receive by the benediction, by the blessings of the demigods, is actually within the realm of their own karma, or within the realm of material nature. But Krishna wants to distinguish such worshippers from his devotees, and so he speaks this verse today. Ananya Chintayanto Mam, this verse. He says, although the worshippers of the demigods may be maintained in that way, they enjoy somaras and the heavenly planets and everything, but my devotees now, I maintain them directly. The demigods worshippers are given pleasures by the demigods, and that's within the realm of material nature. But my devotees, I give them happiness directly. And the happiness that my devotees experience is transcendental happiness. It has nothing to do with the kind of happiness that these demigod worshippers experience. This is completely blissful, transcendental. And yes, I love my devotees so much that I take full responsibility for looking after their every need. And therefore this famous slogan, Yoga Kshemam Vaham Yaham. Yoga means requirement, Kshema means protection. So yoga means I want, and Kshema means yes, I need to protect. So everyone in this world is struggling for these two things, yoga and Kshema. We want to accumulate more and more, and then we are in immense anxiety to protect what we have. Sometimes we succeed in getting what we want, in which case we are happy for some time, and then that very object of desire becomes a source of trouble later on, then we become unhappy. When we are not able to achieve what we want, we become also unhappy. And even if you have what you desire, then you're anxious to protect that so that nobody else may take it away from you. So in any case, whether you have it or you don't have it, you're unhappy, ultimately. So this is a story of Yoga Kshema of the people of this world. So Krishna is saying, don't bother, to his devotees, don't bother worrying about your yoga kshema of this world. That I will carry. I will carry the burden of your protection, your maintenance, your needs and everything. Vahami. The word Vahami is important because it means that Krishna is carrying. Vahami means to carry. I'm sure in the last 7 days you've all heard the story of Arjuna Acharya and the two boys, so I will not repeat it here now. It's a famous story Prabhupada repeated time and again. Very beautiful story that illustrates this point. But the word Vahami is important because Krishna is saying here that I will personally carry the burden. So someone may ask, well, is it right? Is it really devotional for a devotee to dump his requirements on the Lord and say, you take care of my burden? It's not a very devotional thing to do. So why should a devotee, what kind of bhakti is this? If the devotee is just leaving it to Krishna, that okay, I'm not going to worry because you're going to carry now whatever I lack, protect what I have. So then Krishna replies and says, no, no, my devotee doesn't want it. It's not that he's putting the burden on me, but it's my nature that of my own, voluntarily, I choose to carry that burden for him or her. And actually speaking, it's not a burden because in any case I am running millions and millions of universes just by my sheer will. My energies are in action and doing everything simply as I desire. Everything is going on according to my desire alone. So it's not, when I can maintain millions of universes, why is it difficult for me to just maintain my devotee? So it's not a burden for me, Krishna said. Don't think that it's a burden. I'm happy to do it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a man who is very happy to earn and look after a very loving family. He may work hard, but it's a labor of love, as they say. So similarly, Krishna, out of love for his devotee, doesn't mind. On the contrary, he likes to do it. He likes to take on this little burden. It's not actually a burden, but still a responsibility. He likes it. This is what devotion is all about. And as far as the devotee is concerned, he always feels awkward. He always feels ashamed. Oh, because of me, Krishna had to endure this difficulty. I shouldn't trouble the Lord for anything at all. This is Madhavendra Puri's mood. You all know the story of Kirchora, Gopinath. Madhavendra Puri was thinking that I would like to taste this kheer just to offer to my Gopal, and the moment he thought that I am even thinking of eating what has not already been offered to the Lord, he became so embarrassed that he immediately walked out, but Gopinath remembered him. And he sent out the pujari with a kheer and gave it to him and fulfilled his desire. So Madhavendra Puri did not want to do anything that would interfere with the Lord. It was Madhavendra Puri's principle that he would not ask for food. It's called the Ajagar Vritti. And Ajagar is a python. He just keeps his mouth open and he sits there like that. If anything comes in the mouth, he closes. Otherwise, he chants Hare Krishna. He can't. Even the lion of the forest, the king of the forest, the lion cannot do that. He also has to work. But Madhavendra Puri was like that. If he did not get food, he would think that, well, Krishna doesn't want to, he wants me to fast today. So he would fast. But Krishna would come on his own anyway and personally give him milk. And then Madhavendra Puri would feel embarrassed. Even here we see the stories of the six Goswamis. Whenever Raghunath Das Goswami was served by Srimati Radharani, Sanatana Goswami chastised him. You can't take service from Srimati Radharani. Similarly, when Rupa Goswami made some kheer for Sanatana Goswami, Radharani had come and given the milk, again he was chastised that, well, you can't accept service from the lordships. So the devotee's mentality is that he or she doesn't want to take service from the Lord, doesn't want to be a burden on the Lord, But at the same time, the Lord is happy to look after His devotee. And sometimes also, He says, let me experience being dependent on my devotees. And then he becomes a child, he comes to Vrindavan, and then he makes so many demands on his parents. I want this, I want that, if you don't give me this, you know, he breaks the pot, he starts crying, and then it is his parents' burden to maintain him. And they are always anxious about Krishna's maintenance and his welfare. So this is the reciprocal relationship of love between Krishna and his devotees. That's the purport of the word Vahami Aham. It's only Krishna who can do it. When Krishna is maintaining the animals in the forest, as Prabhupada used to say, even the atheists are being maintained by Krishna, so why will he not maintain his devotees? So this is the purport. So this verse is a very devotional verse which gives us the key of how we should live in this world. Not being overly anxious about one's own physical maintenance, but rather prosecuting Krishna consciousness very, very nicely. Ananya chintayanto mam. This principle applies to one who is an ananya bhakta, who is an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Ananya chintayanto mam, one who is always thinking of Krishna. Ye janaha paryupasita, one who is constantly worshipping me. Tesham nitya abhyuktanam, one who is constantly engaged, nitya, in my service. One need not be concerned that, well, I'm not a pure devotee, I'm just a neophyte. Doesn't matter. If we are constantly striving to serve Krishna to the best of our ability, that is the thing Krishna is looking for. And Krishna will take care of all our needs. This is the sum and substance of this chapter. And having stated this, again in the next two verses, he will go back to the demigods, the subject of the demigods, and explain how, because the demigods' worshippers are dependent on the demigods, the destinations that they will attain are different from the destinations that my devotees will attain. And after having talked about that, the last 8 or 10 verses of this chapter then are plain glorification of the process of devotion. About bhakti, culminating in the famous Manmana Bhavamat Bhakto verse. Hare Krishna. We have only a few minutes left. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru. This one last statement Prabhupada makes that the Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness for yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life. Just want to know that if one becomes fully Krishna consciousness, where is the question for him to fall down? Why so? Why is making like this statement?
Well, when Prabhupada says that one should become fully conscious, not necessarily the one who is in the platform of Prema Bhakti. He's talking about a devotee who is constantly engaged in his devotional service, always striving to work for Krishna. Maybe on a very elevated platform even, but is constantly striving to serve Krishna in the best possible way. So, Prabhupada is giving an interesting angle to the Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham, wherein he is saying here, in this last part of the purport, that Krishna not only protects us materially and maintains the body, but more importantly, he protects our Krishna consciousness. He nourishes our Krishna consciousness. When we are struggling to serve him, he makes us pure devotees by his mercy. And he also protects our Krishna consciousness so that we don't lose it. That is his protection, his highest protection. And sometimes in order to give that protection, he may forego his material protection. He may sometimes take away from a devotee something. As Yudhishthira Maharaj was complaining that we are devotees, we have surrendered everything to Krishna, But see, he has taken away everything from us. On the other hand, Duryodhan, he is an evil man, but he is prospering like anything. And we Pandavas have given everything for you, Krishna. And just see, what is our state? We've lost our kingdom, our wife was lost and humiliated, we're living in the forest, undergoing so many difficulties of all kinds. So Krishna's mercy is coming in different ways. Yasya ham anugrinami harishetat dhanam shanay. That to those who receive my mercy, I take away everything they have. So, in order to facilitate that higher protection, to give us nourishment in Krishna consciousness, Krishna may sometimes, if he thinks fit, take away from his material protection. In any case, his body is not going to last forever. So Krishna never makes a promise that I will protect your body eternally. So one time his body is going to get destroyed. So his ultimate protection is for our Krishna consciousness. Any other question or comment? Yes.
Prabhuji, how does one come to the level of Ananya with no other object?
How does one come to the platform of unalloyed devotion service? By following the process that Srila Prabhupada has taught us, we are doing what is called sadhana bhakti, the process of engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada has explained, he has made a complete program for us in ISKCON to be completely engaged from morning to night in various services for Krishna. And if we just follow this process, then automatically we will progress to that stage. Yes, somebody
has. How can we taste the nectar of devotion by the tongue? By the formula of Manmana Bhava.
By going on doing it. In the nectar of instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami says that a patient of jaundice finds sugarcane juice to be bitter. The fault is not in the sugarcane juice, it is sweet. The fault is in the person because he has this disease. Similarly, Krishna's holy name, talks about Krishna, are full of sweetness, they are nectarian, very delicious. But for a person who has his heart full of impurities, one may not be able to realize this sweetness. So the only way for a patient of jaundice to be cured is to constantly take every day sweet sugarcane juice, even though he finds it bitter. And then the disease will be cured. And the symptom is that he finds gradually the sweetness of that sugar cane coming back to his tongue. In the same way, the more we engage in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, more and more we will find it interesting, the more and more we will find it worthy of hearing more and more, we become attached. And that's how gradually we become, we are qualified to then experience that nectar of Krishna consciousness. Yes. Mic, please.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
The present verse is an assurance to the devotees who are engaged in devotion for 24 hours. But what about those devotees who are not at this platform?
They should come to that platform. They should strive 24 hours to come to that platform.
He doesn't take care for them.
Of course he will. The more you strive, as I mentioned, Krishna is taking care even of the atheists. Krishna is taking care of the ant and also the elephant. So will Krishna not take care of his neophyte devotee? Why not?
Okay.
He will take care of everyone. But the more we surrender, the more we experience his protection and his care. Yes, Maharaj.
This is a good example. one example that, you know, I'm being protected by the government of India because they stamped my passport, so they have this responsibility to protect me. But it's impersonal protection. You know, somebody else may be directly protected by the defense minister of India. This is some protection. So if you become pure devotees, then Krishna takes more and more
personal interest.
Yeah.
So Krishna takes personal interest in his pure devotee, and therefore he says here, Vahami, that I personally carry. So his personally carrying the burden of maintenance and protection is for his unalloyed devotees. But through his energies, he may protect everyone else. Yes,
sir. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, when that protection starts, shall be in the beginning or in the middle, or when we achieve that state of protection? When it begins, when we feel that Krishna is protecting us?
It's already started. From the time one starts chanting Krishna's name, it's already started. Sakrit eva prapanno yaha tavasmiti cha yachate abhayam sarvada tasmai dadam yetat vratam mama. This is the famous episode of Vibhishan abandoning the camp of Ravan and flying across the sea to come to the place where Lord Ramachandra was assembled with his warrior monkey army. And everyone else was very suspicious of Vibhishan. He's a spy. He should be done to death. He's come here to spy on us. A Rakshasa will always be a Rakshasa. Can never be trusted. And the Lord Ram, the matter was brought before him. And he pronounced his verdict. He says, Sakrit evaha prapannoya. If one person, even one time, Sakrit eva, surrenders to me. Prapanna means surrender. If a person surrenders to me, even one time, by saying, Tava asmi, I am yours, my Lord. Iti yachate, with this plea, if a person comes even one time to surrender to me like this with his heart, then I take care of him. Abhayam sarvada tasmai. I award him fearlessness. Dadami. I give him that. Vratam mama, this is my vow. So even a simple thing like going up and chanting, feeling the Krishna's name, it invokes Krishna's protection immediately.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Premanande. So from tomorrow the Bhagavad Gita classes will be here. From, yeah, every day tomorrow. Till further notice.
Hare Krishna. Haan. हाँ, उस टाइम बोल रहे थे कि मतलब जो भगवद गीता है उसको